Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yuma, daf Samech. We again thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsoring the daf. The learning we do is Zecher Nishmas Loa Zaltzman. The daf continues from a discussion that we had yesterday regarding the Me'ila. We are finished primarily with the Avoda of the Dam of Yom Kippur. The Mishnayos in the fifth parak have taken us through Hazas Adam, the sprinkling of the blood, that's done on three separate occasions. Once in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, again by the Paroches, and the third time by the Mizbeach HaZahav. Two animals' blood is going to be brought into all three arenas. The Kohen Gadol shechs the par, which is his personal chatas, shechs the seir, which is the chatas of the Jewish people, and will take both bloods and bring him in to number one, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, sprinkle both. Two, into the Heichal, sprinkle both. And three, over to the Mizbeach, and sprinkle both. Our Mishnah is of the opinion that when it comes to the Mizbeach HaZahav, so he mixes the two parts together, and then he does the application. So it comes out for a total of 16 Hazas inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, 16 Hazas towards the Parochas. I'm combining the two, the Par and the Seir. So make a total of 16. And then another 4 plus 7. Right, four around the corners of the Mizbeach HaZahav, plus another seven onto the top of the Mizbeach HaZahav with both. Now, and that number doesn't get doubled because the two bloods got mixed together. And that will be the totality of the Dam, the Avoda for the Dam on Yom Kippur, as the Kohen Gadol is wearing his Big Day Lavan. One other point to consider, which is what we discussed yesterday, what happens to all the blood that's left over, the Shirayim? So the Mishnah says it gets poured on the Yesod HaMizbeach. In other words, after doing the Hazah on the Mizbeach HaZahav, he takes whatever blood is left over, the Shirayim, he goes out and he is going to be meeting the Mizbeach, on its west side, and he will be pouring it on the Yesod, onto the foundation of the Mizbeach. And then the Mishnah went on to describe how, what happens at that point in time is that it flows down into a canal, and the blood is then going to be carried, delivered outside of the Beis HaMikdash, the area of the Beis HaMikdash. What is the fate of the blood? So the Gemara says the blood can be used for whatever you want. The gananim, the people who work in the field, they could take the blood and use it for fertilizer. But the Mishnah says they have to pay for the blood. If they don't pay for the blood, there's going to be an Isra of Me'ila on the blood. The Gemara recognized yesterday that Isra Me'ila is not an Isra Min HaTorah, meaning that the blood is really not subject to Me'ila Min HaTorah. It is a din derabbanan. It's a rabbinic enactment that was made. Perhaps they made it simply because, well, they made it for whatever reason they made it. But perhaps it's because it belonged to Hektesh. Once upon a time it was Hektesh, but in actuality the din d'oraisa is that the blood is not subject to Me'ila. Why not? Why isn't the blood subject to Me'ila? So that's what we saw yesterday. That was the end of yesterday's daf and testament base. So pick it up from there. We'll talk about why the dam is not mol behek. There's no Me'ila by dam. And we will finish off the Gemara's discussion on this topic. We're going to take a step backwards, and we're going to go back to Adkan. In other words, let's just start from the top of the Amud Beis. We did this yesterday, but just quickly to reiterate, because it just brings us right into today's daf. Adkan lo pligi elam ederabanan. The olam achlokis in the Mishnah as to whether or not there's an isra of me'ila by the blood, that's only by din derabanan. Avam midaraisei mo'alam bahem. But the Gemara acknowledges that there is no isra me'ila in a Torah on the blood. Manahan emilia, and why should that be? Why is that so? So amru lamakar lachem shalachem yehei. Because when the Torah describes blood, the Torah describes it as lachem, it's yours. We have possession of it. In other words, what's the whole idea behind me'ila? Me'ila means it belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And if we use it for our own purposes, we're misappropriating because it doesn't belong to us. By the Torah describing blood, the Torah using the terminology of lachem, lachem means it's ours. It's ours, which means that it's not subject to me'ila. That's one possible source of why it is that there's no me'ila by blood. Debei Rabbi Shimon tana lechaper kapar nasatu v'lo l'me'ila. Rabbi Shimon learns it out from a different pasuk. The pasuk says, describing the blood, that the blood serves as a kapara, meaning it has a singular purpose, and that is it's a kapara. In other words, the Torah doesn't describe it as belonging to Hektesh. The Torah just simply says the blood is very mission-oriented. It has just simply one purpose, and that is provide a kapara. There's no issue whether or not it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, doesn't belong to the Beis HaMikdash, no. In other words, it's just a very mission-oriented item. And therefore, if I use it for my own personal use, I'm not on violation of Me'ila. That's another possibility. And then the Gemara brings a third possibility. So Rav Yochanan Amar, Amakra, who? When the Torah describes the blood, the Torah says it is, meaning it is in a constant state of being. There is no change in the status of the blood. The Gemara says, "Why? What exactly does that mean? Lifnei kapara kalacha kapara. Just like its status was before the kapara, so too will be the status after the kapara." Now we know malacha kapara in bamiila, lifnei kapara in bamiila. We know that after the kapara, there's not subject to meila because, well, the Gemara is about to say, but I'll say it now. Nasa mitzvah, so you've done the mitzvah. One of the basic rules regarding meila is that once the mitzvah has been performed, it is not subject to. It's not subject to meila. So, and the Gemara is arguing, Rav Yochanan is arguing, that the blood doesn't go through a status change because the Torah describes it as who? It is in a state of being. So just like Acher Kapar, it's not subject to Me'ila, so too Liftei Kapar, it's not subject to Me'ila. The Gemara says, well, why don't we take the same logic and go in the other direction? Ve'ema. La'acher Kapar, Liftei Kapar. Ma Liftei Kapar, Yesh Bamila. Af La'acher Kapar, Yesh Bamila. Look, maybe it doesn't go through a status change, and maybe the status is, it always is going to be subject to Me'ila. So the Gemara says, that's not tenable. Why not? So the Gemara says, because there is no such thing in the Torah where you've done the mitzvah, you perform the mitzvah, and then post performance it's subject to me'ila. We don't have that. That doesn't exist. The Gemara says, yeah, but why don't we consider, first of all, Trumas Hadeshen, every morning the Kohen goes up to the top of the Mizbech and takes one shovel full of the ash, comes down and deposits it on the west side of the ramp. On the east side of the ramp. So that's a mitzvah. And furthermore, after he deposited the ash by the east side of the ramp, it's still going to be subject to me'ila, meaning nobody can benefit from those ashes. Ashes back in the good old days, they used to use it as a cover for a wound, whatever. In other words, but you, even after the mitzvah has been done, you cannot benefit from the Trumas Hadeshen. So what happened to your rule? Your big rule was every time a mitzvah has been done, so there's no longer me'ila. But that's not true. V'alova ha'ri Trumas Hadeshen. So the Gemara, we turn to the top of Samach Amud Aleph. K'mishum de'havi Trumas Hadeshen. Big dekuna sheksum v'mayim ke'echad v'chol sheksum v'mayim ke'echad e'im alamdim. So the Gemara says, look, if Trumas Hadeshen was the only mitzvah where the Torah describes as it having an Isra me'ila post-mitzvah performance, so then you're right. Then what would happen is that we would have what's called a binyanav. It would set a precedent, and that would be true throughout all of Karbanos, that even after the mitzvah has been done, it's subject to Mila. But it's not the only episode, it's not the only time in the Torah where the Torah says post-mitzvah performance, it's subject to Mila. There's Trumas Hadeshen, and there's the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol. Begadim of the Kohen Gadol is, after the mitzvah has been done, still subject to Mila. Okay, which the Gemara is going to clarify how we know that, but it's still subject to Mila. So here we have now what's called Shnei Ksuvim Mabayim Ke'achad, two psukim to make a point. Now, if the Torah wanted to set a binyanav, so how many times does the Torah need to say something? Once, and create a precedent throughout the rest of the Torah. But once the Torah now has to say it on two occasions, what does that mean? It's no longer the rule, it's now the exception. It's the exception to the rule. So the Gemara is arguing, I now have Trumas Hadeshen, I have Big Day Kahuna. They both speak to the idea that even after you've done the mitzvah, it's subject to Mila, because there are two, so therefore they are no longer the rule, they are the exception.
It
could be, no, it could be more. Meaning, but once you have two, so then it's the exception and not the rule. The Gemara will know, okay, we'll get to the Gemara in just a second. But anyway, so let's see how the Gemara continues with this discussion. So the Gemara says, yeah, but this is subject to a debate. Not everyone's in agreement that the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol is subject to Me'ila after the mitzvah has been done. Now, it is the opinion of the Chachamim, and granted the majority position that says that the Big Day Kahuna are subject to Mila after the mitzvah has been performed, but and the Begadim, the Kohen Gadol, have to be placed into Geniza, meaning you have to bury them, hide them, nobody else can use them. Okay, fine, but that's the opinion of the Chachamim. Rabbi Dosa disagrees. Rabbi Dosa says that the Begadim of a Kohen Gadol is not subject to Mila after the mitzvah has been done. In fact, they can be reused. Who's going to reuse the Begadim of a Kohen Gadol? And the answer is regular Kohen. Now, there are some technical issues. In other words, there's fitting issues. Right? The Begadim have to be worn. They have to be worn to fit you. Right? Midah. So we said a number of times So if you're going to be using the old Kohen Gadol's clothing, so you're going to have to be the same size as the Kohen Gadol. Fine, there's that issue, and we had a discussion earlier about the belt. Could be that the belt worn by the Kohen Gadol is not the same belt worn by the Kohen Hedger, but okay, fine. But in other words, but basically, the white clothing by Kohen Gadol basically could be worn by Kohen Hedger. So according to Rabbi Dosa, and an interesting Rashi says, why should that be? Why is there no longer Me'ilah by the begadim of a Kohen Gadol? So you take a look at the second Rashi. Rashi writes, "V'kaimalam bigdei kohuna ein bahem meila mimnei shelo nitna tor la malachei asharis shiyu zrizim la poshtam yad." Because let's think about this. Let's say there is an isra of meila by the begadim. It comes out very strange. It comes out now that while the Kohen Gadol is doing the avod, he has to wear his begadim. Right? In other words, as we've discussed a number of times, you're mechus begadim. You're not wearing your begadim. Kohen Gadol is missing any one of the begadim that he needs to be wearing. So the avodah is psula. The avodah is no good. Okay, so while he's doing the avodah, obviously it is both permitted and required to wear the begadim. But after the avodah is over, what justification does he have to wear the clothing? No justification. In fact, just the opposite. The clothing is providing for him warmth, shelter, comfort. And he's not doing the avodah. So basically what's happening now, he's being moel behekdesh. The clothing belongs to Hekdesh, and he's benefiting from Hekdesh. So what comes out then is something very strange. The moment the avodah is over, so the Kohen Gadol's got to strip down, because if he's no longer in the performance of the avodah, he's mol behekdesh. Now, is it humanly possible? No. And Rashi points out, lo nitna tor la malachei asharis, meaning the Torah was not given to malachim, the Torah was given to us. We're human. They're subject to error, and we're just simply imperfect. We are. So the conclusion would therefore be that the Kohen Gadol was put in almost an impossible position where the begadim are okay for him to wear while doing the avodah, but the moment the avodah is over, he's now going to be, he's wearing it, he's benefiting from it, and he's subject to me'ilah. It's impossible. Therefore, Rabbi Dosa's argument is that the clothing of the Kohen Gadol is not subject to me'ilah. Okay, now, how the Chachamim going to counter that? I'm not sure. Maybe they'll tell you that the moments after he finishes the avoda, it's still, he's still in the glow of the avoda, in the aftermath of the avoda. I don't know. You have to say something like that. Sure. Yes.
Even if you assume it does have me'ilah.
Yeah.
You can't compare it to blood.
No, but correct. But after the mitzvah's been done, that's it. Meaning it's over.
It has no kedushah. Hakuf is blood.
Well, no, the blood itself has kedushah, but once the mitzvah's over, that's it. In other words, the kedushah's gone. In other words, it's accomplished its goal. So with the same thing with the clothing. Once the avodah is done, it's accomplished its goal. And there's the Kohen Gadol wearing the clothing. Okay, look.
Is that actually the accepted one, or no?
You know, it's funny. I don't know. That's not funny. That's sad. But what's funny is Rashi, when he introduces this idea of Rabbi Dosa, he says v'kaimalan. In other words, Rashi is like, right, the way Rashi says it, it's like, oh, and we all know that's how we hold. So okay, I did pick up on that in Rashi, but I do not know which is the accepted position. Anyway, so it comes down now that the begadim of the Kohen Gadol no longer is part of the discussion. Yeah. So let's now recap what's been going on. We've said that when it comes to the blood, there is no longer me'ilah after the blood's been sprinkled. In fact, the Gemara says that's not. It's actually more than that. Even before the blood is sprinkled, there's no longer me'ilah. Why? Because the Torah describes blood as being who? It's in a constant state of being. There's no status change regarding the blood. To which the Gemara says, okay, why don't we go the other direction? Why don't we say that it's subject to me'ilah both before and after the Zrika Saddam? So the Gemara says, well, I can't say that because after the mitzvah, where do we have me'ilah after the mitzvah? To which the Gemara said, well, we have it by Trumas Hadeshin. To which the Gemara said, yeah, but that we have two psukim. We have Trumas Hadeshin, we have Big Day Kahuna. And so therefore we're now under the category of Shnei Ksuvim Mabayim Ke'echad. No longer the rule, but rather the exception. But now the Gemara says, yeah, but take away Big Day Kahuna. Because according to Rav Dosa, Big Day Kahuna is not subject to me'ilah after the mitzvah has been done. So now what am I left with? I'm only left with one other place in the Torah where after you've done the mitzvah, subject to me'ilah, and that's Trumas Hadeshin. So now we're at one. One is a binyanav. So now what are you going to say? Okay, that's where we're at in the Gemara. So Ella la Rabbi Dosa, sorry, Hanich la Rabbi Adama, Ella Rabbi Dosa, Dama Rabbi Dekun, Eruin, Hilkon, Hedge, Michael, and Memar, Misham David, Shomas Adeshan, the Egla Rufa, Shnakes of Mamim Ke'echad, the Chosh Snakes of Mamim Ke'echad, and Malamdim. So the Gemara says, fine, but we do have a number two. The number two, in other words, take out Big Dekahuna and replace it with Egla Rufa. Now, Egla Rufa is subject to Mi'ila prior to the Shechita, but after the Shechita is done, and I say Shechita, it's not Shechita, it's Arifa. Okay, the back of the neck, not the front of the neck. It's not a shechita, but still. After you've done the mitzvah, it is still subject to me'ila. The Torah describes, Rashi brings down the pasuk, ksiv basham, sham teheginizasa. The word sham means it will continuously be there. After the arifa is done, after I broke the step, the back of the neck of the eagle, of this calf, still, it's going to have kedusha, still, it's subject to me'ila. Now we're back at two psukim. That's where we want to be. Because now we're under the category of Shnei Ksuvim Baim Ke'echad. So now by Chumas Adeshin and by Egla Rufa, we have this rule of even after the mitzvah has been done, it's subject to Me'ila. Everywhere else, once the mitzvah has been performed, it's not subject to Me'ila. The Gemara now throws a curveball. The Gemara says, okay, but not everyone says that two is the exception. There are those who are of the opinion that even if it's two, that still could produce a rule, not an exception. Only now when you start with three, then and only then do you have an exception, but two could be a rule. Okay, hard to understand why that should be. In other words, it makes much more sense that one is the rule and two is the exception. Why does the Torah have to say it on two occasions? It could be that the two need one another. Maybe. The Gemara doesn't really explore this issue. Okay, but the Gemara says, but there is someone who subscribes to that viewpoint. So we have to try to placate that viewpoint, to which the Gemara says, Tremu Tuxive. The Gemara says, yeah, but I'll tell you why we know that in this particular scenario, these two are exceptions, not the rule. How do I know that these two are exceptions? Because in both, the Torah uses a language of limitation. This Samo, regarding the Egla Rufa, no. Visamo regarding the Chumas Adeshin, and you will place it there. It is an exclusionary term, meaning it only applies to the Chumas Adeshin, or even though I've done the mitzvah, it's still subject to Me'ila. And Ha'arufa, the Arufa. The means that only in this particular scenario is it subject to Me'ila, even after Nasa Mitzvah, so even after the mitzvah has been done. Okay. Period.
So then it's accepted?
Yeah, right. So the Gemara says that's it. In other words, that's how I know. Even if you subscribe to the rule of Shnei Ksuvim Abayim Kechad Malamdim, but still, because in both of these occasions, by the Chumas Adeshin, Visamo, and by the Egla Rufa, Ha'arufa, so they're exclusionary, this is the exception, not the rule. Good. The rule being that once the mitzvah is done, it's not subject to Me'ila. Now we go back to our discussion. So once you sprinkle the blood, it's not subject to Me'ila. Good, because of the rule of once the mitzvah has been done, there's no longer Me'ila. That's the rule. And then because the Torah, when describing the blood, uses the word who, so that means it doesn't go through a status change. So once I know that after the mitzvah has been done, it's not subject to Me'ila, even before the mitzvah is done, the blood is not subject to Me'ila. That's a rabbinic enactment. The rabbis enacted it. But Minotaur, it's not subject to Me'ila. Meaning if the farmers didn't pay, they would not be in violation of Me'ila Minotaur. Okay, they would just be... However the rabbis want to, you know, want to enforce their legislation. But that's rabbinic. It's not Minotaur. Good. Yeah. Now, kisui is by a shechita. No, in fact, just the opposite. In this particular case, the blood they wanted the blood to flow out. They get recycled. It's one of your first examples in the Torah of recycling.
Is that
Yeah, the mitzvah of kisui adam is only for birds and for wild animals. There's no by behema. There's no mitzvah of kisui adam. That's correct. Oh, it's separate issue. Okay, v'hani tlasi kra v'hani tlasi kra b'dam lamalei. Now, you go back to the beginning of this discussion. What do we say? Blood is not subject to Me'ila. But we didn't just say that. We said it on three. We said three times. Meaning, you go back to the beginning of where we start today's daf. You'll see. How do I know the blood is not subject to meila? So either it's because of lachem, or it's because of lachaper, or because of the word who. So three different limudim. Now, the way I understood originally was that, okay, you know, there were three separate opinions. The Gemara right now is assuming no. These three opinions are actually working in concert with one another. They're all complementing one another. Meaning from three different aspects, blood needs to be excluded. And so now that we're saying that, so the obvious question is, what three aspects? Meaning blood's being excluded from what? So we know it's being excluded from Me'ila. That's obviously the point. But the Gemara now wants to know, Tlav Vahani Tlas to cry, Bidam Lamali. Well, why do I need three psukim when it comes to blood? So, number one, chalamute minosar. Number two, v'chalamute mimila. Number three, v'chalamute mituma. So the Gemara now explains that from three separate aspects, blood is excluded. Number one, it's excluded from nosar. Okay, which means like this, explains Rashi. Now, eating blood, right, as the Gemara elsewhere says, it's hard to understand, meaning who likes eating blood? I know in various cultures, drinking blood is very popular, but the Gemara elsewhere has a debate whether or not, now the Torah prohibits blood, and you look at the Torah repeats it again and again, right? One of the most oft-repeated Isurim in the Torah, not to eat blood. And the Torah in the description of not eating blood says, Chazak levotil lechol dam, right? Be strong. Right, to which the Gemara quips in another place, be strong. I mean, that's not one of our real Yetzirahs in this world. Oh, that blood. that's exciting. Okay, but fine. Anyway, but there's a prohibition of the Torah to eat blood. What the Gemara here points out is that, let's say the blood becomes nosar. Right? We know regarding the meat of an animal that every animal has a shelf life. We're not talking about health-wise, we're talking about halacha-wise. Shlamim is 2 days. After the second day, it's now no longer edible. Chatas is one day, one night, then the night following. So every carbon has a shelf life. And the carbon Pesach, the shortest shelf life, carbon Pesach, one night, and according to one Tana, half of one night. It's just, it's a six-hour window. After that point in time, the meat now becomes prohibited. It's nosar. What if you and I were to sit down and have a meal with meat that's nosar? So, A, it probably is a little spoiled, but B, and much more importantly, that's a chiv kares. That's a kares prohibition to eat nosar. What if you ate nosar of blood? Blood was left over beyond the allotted time. So, are you subject to kares? So the Gemara says that's pasuk number one. Pasuk number one is telling me that blood is not subject to the prohibition of nosar. Now, granted, as Rashi points out, it has its own prohibition, meaning you'll get kares for just simply for eating blood. So what are we talking about? The double kares prohibition, meaning it's already subject to kares. So Rashi writes, you can see this inside of Rashi, Chad lamute minosar, shimachal dam nosar bishogeg, eino chayv ala achas. So first of all, Rashi points out there are shogeg ramifications, meaning what if I ate the blood in a state of shogeg? So now it's blood and it's nosar. So, okay, so you have now a double prohibition. Now we have rules that govern this. Ein iser chal al iser, but
so you did half of it, but shogeg half of it.
Yeah, it gets a little bit complicated. I don't know, whatever. It gets a little bit complicated. Let's not make it complicated. Let's try to simplify. So Rashi says, im achal dam nosar b'shogeg einu chayv al achas. So number one, Rashi points out, you only be chayv one, not two. Because again, the point, our Gemara's point is blood is not does not become nosar because of the exclusionary terminology used in the Torah. And now Rashi points out, v'chein imachal dam kachim b'tumas aguf, shu b'kares, b'kulam eno chayev ala achas, mishum dam. The other exclusion the Gemara made is tuma, meaning that normally if I eat carbon while the carbon's tamei, that's also a serious offense in the Torah. That's also a chiv kares. So, or if I eat carbon while I'm in a state of tumas aguf, that's also an iser kares. So Rashi points out over here, by blood, it's not an iser kares because of the exclusionary term used in the Torah. V'cheinim shagag badam v'hezid ba'achas me'ela patam kares. Or Rashi creatively comes up with another scenario where I would get a pass on the eating of the blood, but I could get subject to kares for either nosar or tumah. For example, Rashi says, Let's say I forgot that the Torah tells me I can't eat blood. Okay, now that's a serious forgetting. But let's say I was a shogeg on achilas dam, but I knew the Torah told me I can't eat nosar. All right, they're talking about selective memory. Right, I remember that the Torah tells me I can't eat nosar, but I forgot that the Torah prohibits blood. And so what I do is I sit with a cup of blood that obviously is prohibited by the Torah in of itself, but I forgot. And it was nosar, and then I knew. And afal pi kein, I drink it. So Rashi says you're not going to get kares. That would be a scenario where you would not get kares, right? Because you're shogeg on the achilas dam, but you're amazed on the achilas nosar, on the achilas tuma. Okay. Anyway, you understand what Rashi just simply has to figure out a way in which we could see the application of this principle that blood is excluded from nosar and blood is excluded from tuma. Anyway, back to the Gemara. So it's excluded from nosar, it's excluded from tuma, and obviously the reason why we're on this whole discussion, it's excluded from me'ila as well. Which means that if a person benefits from blood, he's not subject to the prohibition of me'ila. Okay, what is it not? What are we not excluding it from? Aval mipugol lo tzarich lemute kro. So, but we're not excluding it from pigol. And the reason why it says the Gemara, it's not because it is subject to pigol. It just can't be subject to pigol. When we do the Gemara in Zvachim, we spent a lot of time on the topic of pigol. Pigol means that when you do one of the avodas, one of the four avodas, so you say to yourself or you say to somebody else, I'm looking forward to eating the carbon beyond the prescribed time or beyond the prescribed place, right? Chutzim kamo, chutz lizmano, right? The ist of the kares prohibition is for the chutz lizmano. Anyway, so and once the kohen has a machshava of chutz lizmano, I'm going to eat it beyond its prescribed time while doing the avoda, and he completes the avoda. So now the animal is branded as pigol. The animal now has the status of pigol. Anybody who eats a kazayis of such an animal is subject to kares. And if he does a bishogeg, subject to bringing in carbon chatas. So what if I sit down and eat blood that had a pigol machshava? So it's...
Blood is not edible, though.
Sure it is. The Torah says don't eat it. So
I'm saying you're not allowed to eat it in the first place.
Okay, fine. That's a separate issue.
There's no proper time to eat blood.
Correct, but the fine. But in other words, but the Torah is saying don't eat it. It's obviously the Torah doesn't want us eating it. It's edible. But the point the Gemara is making now is that it's not subject to pigol. But I don't need an exclusionary pasuk to tell me that's not subject to pigol. It can't be subject to pigol. Why not? So, but that's a pigol. That's just a pigol rule, and the rule is lo tzarich lemutei kra d'tnan kol sheyesh lamatir bein la'adam bein lamizbech chayav elav mishum pigol v'dam atzmo matirhu. So the Gemara says because we know that the rule regarding pigol is that the only thing that's subject to pigol is something where another item permits this item. In other words, it has to have a matir. Blood doesn't have a matir. Blood is a matir. And because blood is a matir, it's what allows something else to be eaten, so therefore the blood itself is not subject to pigol. So I don't need exclusionary pasuk to exclude the blood from pigol, simply because it's just the rules of pigol. Blood is a matir. Okay, that's where we land on this entire discussion. The Gemara has just finished up, so what are we saying now regarding blood? Just a quick recap. Regarding the blood of a karban. And this would be true regarding the blood of any carbon. We happen to be speaking about the blood of the carbonus on Yom Kippur because the Mishnah just got done describing how when all the avodah is done, you pour the shirayim onto the yesod ha-mizbeach, and the blood now runs out the mizbeach through a canal and is taken by the farmers and used for fertilization. They pay for it, but the Gemara acknowledges, but that's not a din d'oraisa. That's a din d'rabbanan. There is a label of mi'ila on the blood, but a label that's only a din d'rabbanan, not a din d'oraisa. And by the way, you remember yesterday we pointed out that there are tanaim who are of the opinion that there's not even a din mi'ila d'rabbanan on the blood. But okay, but the Gemara is explaining that even though there's a din mi'ila, but even those who say so are only saying so mid-d'rabbanan. Mid-d'oraisa, there is no mi'ila on the blood. Why not? So that was what we've just been discussing for the last 25 minutes. It has to do with the fact that the Torah excludes it from the Isra of Me'ila through the words of Lachem, Lachaper, and Hu. So the Torah excludes it from the Isra of Me'ila. And then the Gemara just simply points out, why do I need three Pesukim? So it's also excluded from Tumah, from Nosar. And I don't even need an exclusion for pigle because we know it's a matir, therefore it already is by definition excluded from pigle. Okay, adkan. Okay, now we're almost done. Meaning, we're almost done. Got more to do for our daf and more to do for the mesechta, but in terms of the avodas yom kippur, let's just take a step backwards and look a little more macro at what we've been looking at in the fifth parak of Yuma, the avoda of the blood of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the paroches and the Mizbeach HaZahav has now come to a conclusion. As we pointed out, the way I labeled it, it's 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, and 3A and B. All the sprinkling of the blood has been done. Furthermore, we also just got done describing that after you've done all the hazos of the part of the seir, you then sprinkle whatever you have left onto the Yisrael Mizbech. So we're done. So what's the mission now, moving the discussion towards? Not a new topic, we're just going to stay on topic, but now we're going to talk about Seder. We're going to be talking about the order. Now the Torah gives a very specific order in terms of how these avodas were done. And that's why giving them the label is so helpful. Meaning the thing has to be done is the sprinkling of the par, the blood of the bull, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's 1A. Followed then by 1B. 1B now requires me to go, the Kohen Gadol to go out to the Azara, shecht the Seir, that lottery was Lashem, bring the blood into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and sprinkle that. Achas lamala v'shev lamata. That's 1B. Then we take the two bloods, go into we. That's the royal we. The Kohen Gadol takes the two bloods and goes into the Heichal and sprinkles in the direction of the Parochus. 2A, 2B. Then he mixes the two bloods together, goes to the Mizbech Hazav and sprinkles it. That's 3A and B. Then he takes the blood that would mix together, whatever's left over, and pours it down the Yesod. Okay, you want to call that number 4? I don't know. But whatever.
The blood of the par and seer, they don't get sprinkled by themselves on the Mizbech HaZahav?
According to one Tana, yes, but that's not the accepted position. The Mishnah says they get mixed together. That's the...
So they each get one in the Kodesh Kodeshim, one by the Parochet. They each get one of those.
Right. And then together...
The mixture gets...
Right. Correct.
3. Right?
And the mixture gets 4 corners of the Mizbech HaZahav.
But it gets also Kodesh Kodeshim. The mixture goes in Kodesh Kodeshim and the Parochet.
No. Once mixed together, the only thing left then is to do the application to the Mizbech HaZahav.
So Mizbech HaZahav only gets one spring of the mixed blood.
Okay, it gets what it gets is 4 on the 4 corners, and then 7 on the top.
But that's only the mixed blood.
Yeah, correct.
Not the power.
The 4, right. The 4 plus 7, that's it. And then whatever's left over is poured onto the Yisrael HaMizbech. Kamasi Yom HaKippurim, we're starting the new Mishnah, we're in Samech Amad Aleph. Kamasi Yom HaKippurim HaMor LaSeder. So any activity that's done that is detailed on Yom Kippur has to be done in its proper order. Seder. And any time you put one thing in front of another that should not have been done, lo asa klum. You have done nothing. It's kilu, you've done nothing. Obviously, you need to go back. So, for example, let's say instead of doing 1B, you do 2A in front of 1B. No good. That 2A is negated. It's as if you didn't do it. You got to go back now and do 1B again, and then go back to 2A. Hikdin dama sar la dama par. So if, let's say, you preempted the Dhamma Seer to the Dhamma Par, so like I just described, so then Yachzer V'yazem Dhamma Seer L'Acher Dhamma Par. So, or let's say like this, let's say you do 1B before 1A. Okay? In other words, you sprinkle the blood of the goat first. No good. You got to go back and you got to do 1A and then go back to 1B. V'imashalo gamar sa hamatar shebefnim nishbach adam. And if before finishing the applications inside the blood gets spilled, and when the Mishnah over here says blood gets spilled, means spilt and lost, because as we pointed out, you could collect the blood and put it back into the bowl. That's not the issue. The only time that becomes a problem is that when after shechting the animal, the blood goes directly from the neck of the animal onto the floor. That blood becomes disqualified. But once the blood's in the bowl, it's okay, obviously it should be avoided. It's okay if the blood fell on the floor, but the Mishnah here is describing nishpach, meaning spilled and lost. So what do? So you have to start again, meaning obviously you have to get new blood. That may require you to get a new animal, get new blood, and start again. And the same thing were true with the Heichal, and the same thing were true with Mizbech HaZalav, Shekulam Kapar Bifnei Atzman, because they all are Kapar Bifnei Atzman. Essentially what the Mishnah says like this. If let's say, while in the middle of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right, let's say he's done four Hazals in the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the blood of the bull, and he spilled and he lost it. Okay, he's got to start over again. Meaning go back to the Achas Lamala. In other words, and if he'll have to go back outside, get a new par, shecht it, bring the blood back inside. So what is he, right? What does he need to start from? He needs to start from Hazan number one. But let's say he did 1A and 1B, and now he's up to 2A, 2B. And in the middle of 2A, that's the blood of the bull in the direction of the parochus. Let's say he did four Hazos, and the blood spilled. He's got to get new blood. But he doesn't have to go back to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Meaning each number, 1, 2, and 3, is considered its own separate unit. So once the Kodesh HaKadoshim is done, it's finished. He doesn't have to go back. Only after he finishes 1, and now he's up to number 2, and he's in the middle of 2A, and the blood spills, unrecoverable. So then he starts at the beginning of 2A, but he doesn't have to go back to 1A.
So he
spills
the goat, he has to
register. Yeah, so if he goes, right, so if let's say he spills in the middle of 1B, presumably he has to go back to 1A.
And you get the bull off.
I think so. It's funny you mentioned that. That's the one point I wasn't 100% clear about. Maybe over the course of the next couple of days, I'll get better clarity on that issue, but I think so. I think the way it's viewed is that each one is its own separate unit. Each place becomes its own separate unit. Now, on this particular point, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon disagree. Just finishing up the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon omrim, makum shepasak misham hu maschal. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon are of the opinion that you can pick it up from wherever you left off. So let's say in the middle of 1A, blood of the bull being sprinkled in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, let's say you went four hazaos in and the blood spilled. You'll get new blood, but you'll pick it up right from number 5. So hazan number 5. And you don't have to start anew, even in every section. So is the opinion of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, and the Gemara will explain that later on. That's tomorrow. That's tomorrow's daf. I assume the Chachamim. Huh?
No intrinsic connection between the blood and the different steps.
In other words, the purpose is that each step provides a kapara, meaning each step, the sprinkling of the blood of Kodesh Kodashim, provide its own kapara. The sprinkling of the blood in the Heichal provide its own kapara. So once you've accomplished that, mission accomplished, and now you can focus on the next mission.
As long as the way that he's back, he's still that it happens to be using blood that has nothing to do with the other two first steps.
Okay, fine, but the other two first steps now, he gets a check in the box. Right? In other words, if there's a checklist, so that they get a check, the Kodesh HaKadoshim gets a check, the Heichal gets a check, and now he's up to the Mizbeach HaZav. So okay, so he just picks it up from the Mizbeach HaZav. Tana Rabbanan. Now, we're talking about how critical each step is in the Seder, and the Mishnah made a very big statement. The Mishnah says, anytime you go out of order, so that's it, it's no good. So what we're going to do now over the course of the rest of today's daf is basically qualify. Is that with every single step of Yom Kippur, order is essential? And if I mess up the order, I get basically, it's totally disregarded. Whatever I flipped in order, whatever should have come first and I did it second, totally disregarded. I got to go back and start it again from that point where I, and the two things that I flipped. That's what it sounds like from the Mishnah. And now as we go through the Gemara, we're going to basically qualify what order is essential. Tana Rabbanan. Komaisa Yom Kippur Ma'amor La Seder Yimik Demaisa L'Chaver Lo Asa Klom. Okay. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa, and the Braisa, same point as our Mishnah. Order is essential. But now we qualify. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amasai. B'dvarim hanasim b'bigdei lavam mibifnim. Aval dvarim hanasim b'bigdei lavam mibachutz im hektim maisel achavero masha asa asui. So Rav Yehuda says, I'm going to put a qualifier in this whole discussion. How order is essential. Yes, order is essential, but only when the Kohen Gadol is wearing his bigdei lavam. And only when doing an avoda that is lifnim. And lifnim over here means, Rashi says, lifnai v'lifnim. Only in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So, yes, order is essential, but only while the Kohen Gadol is wearing his big day lavan, and only while the Kohen Gadol is doing avoda lifnai v'lifnim. So as Rashi points out, take a look at Rashi and the Gemara. Second Rashi, first Rashi mibifnim lifnai v'lifnim. Right, I shared that with you already. Next Rashi, the big day lava mi bechutz. But if it's, let's say, an activity that's done while the Kohen Gadol is wearing his big day lavan, but outside. So Rashi says, for example, kagon hagrala, take the lottery. That in order to determine which goat, and the vidui, and the confession that he does over the goat, ushvicha shirayim, and the pouring out of the blood, which is done out in the azara, v'chomatanos haparoches, or the blood applications against the curtain, which is not in the kodesh kodashim, umizbeach hazav, and the blood applications of the golden mizbeach, im hikdam lahem davar meuchar.
Where is the sprinkling of the blood outside? There's no sprinkling.
Well, outside over here just simply means outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
But there's no sprinkling.
There's a sprinkling against the curtain. That's the 2A and 2B.
Of Kodesh HaKadoshim.
Right. So, the Davar Meuchar, Ein Eilu Ma'akvin Alav Leposlo. So Rashi goes on to say, so it's not Ma'akev. Meaning the order is not Ma'akev. Ava B'shchita V'chafina Modehu Ditzarech Pnim Kifnim Dami. And then Rashi reveals it's not a secret, I don't want to call it a secret, but basically Rashi reveals a point that's going to come up at the end of today's daf, and which we're going to discuss tomorrow. And that is that even in this qualifier, where according to Rav Yehuda, order is essential only wearing the white, only when the Kohen Gadol is wearing his big day lavan, and only for avodas that are done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so even in this position, which is a super qualification, but still it is a little bit expanded. Meaning, what if it's an avoda that's not actually done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but is needed for the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So, for example, says Rashi, chafina, the taking of the ketores. Remember we talked about this? Where was the ketores taken? Not in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It was taken outside. It was taken by the Beis Avtinas, the Lishkas Beis Avtinas, where the Kohen Gadol would go in order to cup his hands, in order to take the two handfuls of ketores. So that is, even though it's done outside, but their order becomes essential, even according to Rav Yehuda. Why? Because that ketores is needed for the lifnai v'lifnim. It's needed for the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so that is under the category of order being essential, because it's needed inside. Or Rashi gives another example, the shechita, meaning the shechting of the parah, the shechting of the seer. Now, although it's done outside, but the shechting is needed for the blood to be sprinkled in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So once again, that order also becomes essential. Okay, that's all. So we have Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda is the most qualified statement, right? But even within that super qualification, it would include any activity needed for the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Going back to the Gemara, the second opinion brought down in the Braisa, Rabbi Nechemia Omer, we're like 6 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Rabbi Nechemia Omer b'medvar, m'mor midvar manasim b'big day lavan b'im b'fnim b'im b'chutz. Rabbi Nechemia is a little more expansive. You know what's essential in terms of order? Anything done by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur while he's wearing the big day lavan. And it doesn't matter where he is. He could be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, could be in the Heichal, could be in the Azara. But if it's an avoda that the Torah requires the Kohen Gadol to be wearing his big day lavan, so that order becomes essential. But if it's something where the Kohen Gadol is doing while wearing his big day zav, for example, says Rashi, the aisle, the ram that he brings, the ram that the Kohen Gadol brings is an ola, it's not a chatas. The Kohen Gadol will be wearing his big day zav while bringing the ram. So there, the order is not essential. The avoda obviously is essential, part of the avoda is Yom Kippur, but the order is not essential. Okay. Atan, meaning that's really the presentation of the machlokas and the brisa between Rav Yehuda and Rav Nechemia. So again, just to quickly recap, order in Yom Kippur is important. Order in Yom Kippur is essential. But what avodas Yom Kippurim is essential? So that's a subject to a machlokas in the brisa between Rav Yehuda and Rav Nechemia. Rav Yehuda says it has to be the Kohen Gadol wearing his big day lavan, and it has to be the lefnai v'lefnim, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. According to Rav Nechemia, any avoda done by the Kohen Gadol while wearing his big day lavan, regardless of where it is, whether it's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, whether it's in the Heichal, or it could be even in the Azara, if the Torah demands the Kohen Gadol will be wearing his big day lavan, order becomes essential, according to Reb Nechemia. Where does all this come from? Meaning the Gemara now just laid out the positions, but where in the Torah does it say that order is essential, and what exactly is the machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Nechemiah? So that's the continuation of today's daf. Amar Rav Yochanan. The Torah describes how this is a chukah. Chukah means, literally translates as a statute. It means this is the way it has to be done. This is going to be a chok. Achas b'shana, one time a year. And now, Rabbi Yehuda, we're on the top of Samach Amud Beis. Rabbi Yehuda savra makom shemes kapren bo pam achas b'shana. Rabbi Yehuda says, you know what it all rests on? The makom. Meaning that one area which is unique to Yom Kippur. What is the one area that's unique to Yom Kippur? Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore, anything that's done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim or needed to be done for the Kodesh HaKadoshim is now essential. Not just the avoda, but the order becomes essential. That's how Rav Yehuda understands the pasuk. Rav Nechemiah says, no, we're not talking about a makom. We're talking about an activity. Anything, any activity that's done once a year. What activities is that? All the activities that are done by the Kohen Gadol while he's wearing his big day lavan. Those are chok. Super essential. Even the order is essential. Atul Rav Yehuda Makom Ksiv. The Gemara says, look, Rav Nechemiah, I hear very well. Rav Yehuda is very hard to understand. The Torah doesn't say Makom. Where in the pasuk does it mention Makom? Elahainu Tamid Rav Yehuda Ksiv Zos Uksiv Achas. So the Gemara refines our understanding of Rav Yehuda. You're right. It doesn't say the word makom, but there are two exclusionary terms used in the Torah. One is achas, and the other is zos. Chalamukte big day lavan, mi bechus v'chalamukte big day zahav. One is exclusionary, telling me that it's that when the Kohen Gadol is not wearing his big day zahav. So, in other words, all activity when the Kohen Gadol is not in his regular big day Kohen clothing. That's essential, and the order is essential. And even in that, we're going to also further subdivide. It's also going to be the word Zos is a further subdivision. Even when he's wearing his big day lavan, only those activities which are worn in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, not outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it's a double miyut. It's a double exclusionary term. Rav Nechemiah chalamute big day zav, chalamute shirayim de lo ma'akve. So the Gemara says, okay, and what's Rav Nechemiah going to do? In other words, he has to acknowledge there is a double exclusion in the Torah. There's the achas and there's the zos. So Rav Nechemiah says, I agreed. There's an achas and a zos. One's to exclude Big Day Zahav. We're ordered by the Big Day Zahav. It's not essential. And one's to exclude Shirayim, the pouring of the blood after all the sprinkling has been done. After you've finished 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, 3A and B, the pouring of the Shirayim, it's not ma'akev. V'Rav Yehuda. Now, what's Rav Yehuda's counter argument to Shirayim? Rav Yehuda's counter argument is very simple. Ima'akve, ma'akve, v'ilo ma'akve, lo ma'akve. Rav Yehuda says, look, the fate of the Shirayim, Rav Yehuda says, I don't treat Shirayim any differently than the rest of the Hazah, than the rest of the sprinkling of the blood. If the Shirayim is essential, meaning if I have to do the Shirayim, so I treat it the same way I treat 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, 3A, and B. Meaning it's no different. And if the Shirayim are not ma'akev at all, so then we don't have to discuss order being essential. Meaning, as we'll see in just a moment, there is an opinion that says that Shirayim are not ma'akev at all. So if you don't even have to do the Shirayim altogether, so why are we even having a discussion about order? Detanya, the Gemara says, look at the Braisa, V'kila mechaper sakodeshim kipir kilavim lo kipir lo kila divir Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says is that if you finish the job, you have a kapara. If you don't finish the job, you don't have a kapara. Amalar Rav Yehuda mimne malo namar. Rav Yehuda says, you know, we could say it this way, im kila kipir v'im lo kila lo kipir. If you finish, you have a kapara, and if you don't finish, you don't have a kapara. Shim chisa achas min amatanos al asav lo klom. If you left out any one of the applications, no good. I mean, you have to do all the applications of the dam. Now, did you hear the difference between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Huda? And if your answer is no, I didn't hear a difference, you're good. it means you get it. Meaning, the Amrina, my Beinayu. The Gemara now wonders, did anyone see to catch the difference between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Kiva? So Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, so the Gemara brings a debate in terms of whether there actually is a difference between them. So one explanation is, there really isn't much of a difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Akiva. In fact, they basically agree. It's just a question of, when seeing the pasuk of v'chila l'chaper, v'chila mikaper, just simply how do I explain it? But in terms of practicality, there's really no difference. And the other says, no, there is an actual difference between them, and that is the shirayim. As Rashi points out, Rabbi Kiva says that shirayim is not ma'akev. So the pasuk says, im kiper ikar hamatanos kila. If you do the kapara comes in the form of sprinkling. You're finished. Shirayim, it's a mitzvah, but it's not essential. And Rabbi Huda says, no, v'chila mikaper. If you finished everything, then it provides a kapara. And by finishing, we mean including the shirayim. So therefore, it comes down now that whether or not the shirayim is essential, according to one viewpoint, is subject to a machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Huda. And now going back to the point that we made earlier, so what Rabbi Nechemia therefore is going to argue is, look, if the shirayim are makiv, it's makiv, and if it's not makiv, it's not makiv. So the Gemara says, yeah, but didn't Rav Yochanan tell us that according to Rav Nechemiah, Shirayim are not Ma'akev? Kashi, the Gemara says, yeah. If in fact Rav Yochanan said that, which the Gemara says, well, assume he said that, so that becomes problematic, that becomes a little bit difficult. Okay. Quickly, let's just wrap it up. Let's summarize and we'll continue tomorrow. So again, we finished up the discussion of Me'ilah by blood today. Is there Me'ilah by blood? The answer is no. Is there Me'ilah derabbanan, midrabbanan by blood? The answer is that's subject to a machlokas. Why is there no Me'ilah by blood? So the Gemara gave three psukim and an explanation in terms of why there's no Me'ilah by blood. And then the other issue, which we started today, we're going to continue tomorrow, is an issue of Seder. Meaning all the avodas mentioned in Parshas Acharei Mos is necessary. Is the order critical? So right now we are at two opinions in the Gemara. One opinion is that order is critical while the Kohen Gadol is wearing his Big Day Lavan. Any activity that he's doing while wearing the Big Day Lavan, not only is critical, but the order is critical. And the other opinion of the Gemara is that no, order is only critical only for while wearing the Big Day Lavan and while in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Then order is critical. But outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Seder is not essential. And we'll continue tomorrow explaining this even better.